Hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. Well, I normally give you great video game music, and this time I'm actually reporting on the Game Music Festival that happened here in Dublin. So have a listen to what went on, and hope you enjoy. So, as I have told you on previous shows and mentioned up, there was the iDig Music Festival that went on last weekend. That was the international, Dublin Games Music Festival, which was pushed and boosted by a lot of great people like Craig, Emer Noon, who I interviewed on this show, Tommy Tallarico, and a whole lot of other things. There was a variety of game and game music events. There were showings of various Irish indie games that were in development. And of course, on Saturday, there was the Game Music Live, where people could just listen to full orchestras just performing away their hearts to some classic video game tunes. So there was a lot of stuff, and if you didn't miss it, I'm sorry, but hopefully I'm able to brought some small sample of it to you right here, right now. I was there, yes, BitNote was there at it, and armed with my trusty Tascam, which I got on loan from Dublin South FM, thank you very much for giving me the loan of such quality recording equipment, I went around and tried to just capture all the flavour I could and get some interviews and everything so that I could bring some of that little great video game music of the iDig Music Festival here to you listeners right now. So to start things off with, I am going to begin with a tune that actually definitely made its rounds. I'm not going to spoil it. I am going to spoil it. It's Baba Yetu by Christopher Tin. And essentially, as I've mentioned on a previous show where I played it, it was in the soundtrack for Civilization 4, and also it was the first piece of video game music to win a Grammy. It did make its rounds. For instance, it was, of course, in Video Games Live, it was played. I saw at least two bands, impromptu music groups, basically play it in their own scheduled events. There was a lot of, great bands around. And, of course, I even got a piece of sheet music of Baba Yetu, which I got from when I registered for iDig, and Christopher Tin even signed it himself. So what I'm going to start off with is the Triforce Quartet. Now, the Triforce Quartet is a band of musicians. They're basically a string quartet, essentially, and they specialize in video game music. They came to Ireland all the way from America, and they generally perform for a lot of events and do a lot of great stuff. And for an hour at the iDig Music Festival, they had a whole, powerful performance, and I believe they played in other places too, and they just played a great selection of video game musics. So, to start off with, I am going to give you the Triforce Quartet's rendition of Baba Yetu, which of course was composed by Christopher Tin, and I think it is a great piece of video game music. They definitely do it a lot. They definitely do it justice, and so have a listen and hope you enjoy. Thank you. And as I said, that was the Triforce Quartet's rendition of Baba Yetu by Christopher Tin. So there was a lot of great stuff like that. There were a lot of bands performing. There was a lot of great music mixed in one form or the other. There was even some nice fan art that was like shown over the monitors, which is pretty cool, including one bit that included Sonic Alpha stuff. So it was kind of someone was taking inspiration from Sonic art that had not actually been released in the actual game itself but held back. So it's kind of funny. But yes, there was a lot of great, but keep in mind, there were a lot of great video game music composers there. And of course, one of them was, of course, the person who composed what you just heard there, i.e. Christopher Tin. I managed to sit down with Christopher Tin, actually, and got an interview with him, where he talked about a lot of great things, such as, of course, Baba Yetu, the Grammy, and also a bit about his thoughts about Irish and Irish culture and Irish literature as well. So, it's certainly an interesting interview. I'll give it to you right now. This is my interview, BitNotes interview with Christopher Tin. So, have a listen and hope you enjoy.
Hello.
So, it's been pretty exciting and here at the IDIG Music Fest. And I've heard one tune of yours, of course, Baba Yetu, has been making its rounds as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that's the tune that I'm most known for.
Of course, it won you. It was the first game tune to ever win a Grammy.
Yes, it was. Back in 2011, it won a Grammy for Best Instrumental Arrangement Accompanying Vocalists, and it became the first ever video game piece of music to win or, you know, be nominated for a Grammy even. So it's been kind of a wild adventure.
I can imagine. And of course, it was originally for the game Civilization IV.
Yes, correct. Although the way that I actually won, well, qualified for the Grammys even, is that a soundtrack was never released for Civilization IV, so I finally decided to take matters in my own hand and re-record the song on my debut album, which is called Calling All Dawns, and that's how it qualified for the Grammys 5 years after the game's release.
Cool. And both the both Civilization IV and your Calling All Dawns album, they both have the whole theme of basically being cultures all across the world.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of a recurring thread in my music, my non-game music anyway. I'm a big traveler, world traveler. I do like to travel a lot. I like to work with interesting musicians from different cultures. I'm in love with the different ways that people sing around the world, and so that's kind of a sort of recurring theme.
Oh, fantastic. And how did you end up doing the track of Civilization IV? I recall that before then you were working on certain movies like the X-Men movies.
Oh yeah, well I mean I was pretty new to town, to Los Angeles I suppose, and I was working in Hollywood. I started out as an intern to Hans Zimmer. I got some opportunities to write music on movies like X-Men 2 and so forth. I was doing a lot of advert work. But then, about 2004 or so, I went to my old university reunion, my five-year reunion, and I went to a school called Stanford University, and I ran into my old roommate, and he basically asked me, "Hey, Chris, what are you doing now?" You know, I told him I'm a composer. I write for films and commercials, and he said, "Well, I'm a game designer now, and I'm working on Civilization IV. Have you ever considered writing music for video games?" And I thought, well, sure, that sounds like a lot of fun. So a few months later, I got a call from Firaxis saying, and actually my friend Soren Johnson, great game designer, by the way, saying that, you know, they're in development of Civilization IV, and he stuck some of my music on the menu screen, and everyone on the development team liked it and said, "Can we hire this guy to write a new song for our game?" And so they hired me, and they asked me to write a song that fused together African vocals, orchestra, and percussion. And those are all things that I'm very familiar with. And so I spent a lot of time, because I wanted to make this song a, you know, a real standout piece of music. So I wrote the song Baba Yetu, and then it just sort of took off.
Fantastic. And I mean, that's, and of course, then you worked on getting it into the album. And so, to go further back, what got you interested in music in the first place? I get the feeling it was like something even from when you were very young, you always had an interest in it.
Yeah, well, I always loved music, and I always had a good ear and a good mind for analysis. So I was always it was just a fun thing I did. You know, you deconstructed music when you listened to it. That's how I listen to music. You know, over the years, I played a number of instruments growing up, piano, trumpet, I sang in choirs, I played guitar in rock bands, I played bass in jazz bands, things like that. Just anything I could get my hands on. I was just infatuated with music. But the common thread emerged that I happened to be better at writing it than playing it, I think, even though I love playing. I love, you know, just jamming and rocking out with friends and stuff like that. But you know, some people are just more suited towards being the ones who push the notes around on paper, and that was me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I've heard it said, you know, a composer needs to know how to play every instrument or something like that. So having familiarity with all the instruments just must make it
It's helpful. Yeah, it is helpful. I mean, I don't know how to play every instrument. I mean, I know how to play a number of instruments, but you know, you don't need to be able to physically play every instrument to know how to write for them. And to, I mean, that's what orchestration study is all about. You know, you study and you learn that, oh, you know, a bassoon can't do these downward runs, or a clarinet can't trill between A and B flat, things like that. And that just comes from experience, school, making mistakes and learning from them, that right. sort of thing.
One thing we were mentioning about and kind of interested in was the area of, like, the whole, you know, right to the music, because of course you created the music under contract for a games company, but mm-hmm. you managed to release your own album with the track in it. So I mean, I think rights is a really interesting area. So exactly how did you manage that?
Well, technically the re-release of the song Baba Yetu on my own album is actually a cover of my own song. Which sounds strange, but you know, the song is owned by 2K Games. But they've graciously allowed me to share in the royalties from the song. And once I signed with Warner Chappell Publishing, they're my publisher now, Warner, I brought 2K into the fold, and now Warner Chappell administers both my portion of the composition as well as 2K's portion as well. So they are now getting the song out there and getting, you know, getting covers of it and getting licenses of it and things like that. You know, the song is owned by the game company, but it's only in recent years through this Warner Chappell deal that 2K Games has been more amenable to letting the song exist outside of the game itself.
Fantastic. Well, much to everyone's benefit.
I think so. I think, you know, something like music should be out there. And I mean, the more out there it is, the more interest it generates for the Civilization franchise.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, it's just, I mean, like, you know, being Irish, there's a strong tradition of Irish music. And I mean, when I started learning about, like, copyright law and stuff, I was saying to my dad, you realize that if you go up and sing a song in a bar, you know, it's like, or even just at a party or something, isn't that technically an unauthorized reproduction since you're doing your own performance of a song? And yet, in Irish culture, making these, you know, ad hoc performances is part of culture. It's
right.
part of sharing. It's part of socializing. So I think it's an example of how, you know, sometimes rights of music can somehow, you know, lose the human equation to everything, you know, about how much value and how enriched we are by hearing music.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, copyright is not about stifling creativity. It's about encouraging it by ensuring those who create a work of art are able to profit from it such that they can have a sustained living and go on to create more works of art, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think in any sort of reality anyone's going to start clamping down on all those, you know, impromptu serenades in the pubs.
Yeah, I know. I'd hope so. That'd be a bit scary if that's really.
You know, but you mentioned that Ireland has a very strong music tradition. It's very true. I mean, I've done some study of, like, the Sean Nós singing tradition and
yes.
so forth. You know, even if you look at it from a popular music standpoint, Ireland is a country of, what, 4 million? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, pretty much.
Consider how a country of 4 million, how much actual impact it has on sort of mainstream pop music. The biggest acts, some of the biggest acts of all time come from Ireland. U2, Enya. Enya is one of the, you know, she, you know,
and even more funner ones like The Corrs or
The Corrs, right. Boyzone. Oh my God, I'd forgotten about Boyzone. Yeah, The Corrs, that's right. Yeah, you know, and then, like, of course, there's, you know, Hollywood's endless fascination with anything Celtic, right? And, you know, the Celtic women, that ensemble. I toured with the Chieftains once. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, they're a great group. The Chieftains and Sinead O'Connor. There's another great Irish artist that hit huge mainstream U.S. success, right?
Nothing compares to her.
I know, it's so true. That was the soundtrack of my middle school life right there. Yeah.
I mean, it definitely is true. So is this your first time to Ireland?
It's actually my second time. I was a postgraduate student in London around 2000, and one of my good friends was a postgraduate student here in Dublin at the Royal Irish Academy of Music. And she invited me to come over just to hang out for a week. And she had a flat in Temple Bar above a pub. So I came over and I stayed with her for a week. Now, I don't think we ever left Temple Bar, actually. I think we were there the whole time. Oh, we did go to the Guinness Brewery, though. That's the one that, you know.
So you did a bit of you got really very traditional with the music.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I don't think I heard a note of music other than the, you know, random barroom singing. But.
Okay, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And, yes, and of course, even one of your tracks from Calling All Dawns is in the Irish language.
Yeah, it's a setting of an old 18th century keen by Eileen the Grey. You know, it's a gorgeous piece of poetry. I mean, I guess that's the other wonderful thing about Ireland, too, the literary tradition, right? Actually, one of Ireland's greatest modernist writers, James Joyce, was a huge influence on me because I was actually an English and music double major. And, you know, I read a lot of random Irish writers, Joyce being, you know, the foremost among them. But Ulysses, in particular, was a big influence. Structurally speaking, I love Ulysses because it is, you know, it's this monumental piece of literary architecture, and there's so much depth to it that when it finally came time for me to create my own albums, I tried to pattern a lot of the way my own albums were structured on ideas that I basically borrowed from James Joyce, right? I mean, for example, both my album, well, my especially Calling All Dawns, starts and ends with the same chord and the same notes, right? And it's meant to play in an infinite loop, just like Finnegan's Wake. You know, Finnegan's Wake starts with River Run past Eves and Adams, from swerve of shore to bend of bay, something like that. And then the end of Finnegan's Wake, it ends mid-sentence as well. It's like, to something, to alone, to... And it ends just abruptly in the middle of a sentence. And then the idea is that you start reading back at the beginning of the... Yeah, exactly, and it's a circular loop. And so that was, you know, something that I absolutely loved. And then there's just all each of the different chapters of Ulysses is patterned after a different chapter of the Odyssey, of course, you know, and they each have themes, like, you know, the Circe chapter is patterned after, you know, the magician, and so, you know, they have a lot of magic symbolism, you know, ingrained throughout the chapter. So I love stuff like that, and you know, those are the sorts of hidden levels of meaning that I like to put in my music whenever possible. Now, the difference between James Joyce and, well, okay, one of many differences. He's a towering genius, and I'm just a guy who pushes notes around. But he was, it's almost impossible to read Finnegan's Wake. Absolutely impossible.
I've heard that. I've never tried it.
It's impossible.
He, like, invented his own words.
He basically invented his own words. And it sounds like really a you know, drunk guy rambling for like 400 pages, but it's amazing, and it's, if you find a way to delve into it, you find all the meaning and things like that, and it's really fascinating. But I never really believed in having that impermeable top layer that you just can't, you know, get through. I've always wanted music to be accessible from the get-go, and then a secondary layer of meaning or a tertiary layer of meaning is fantastic to imbue in your music, but at the very outset your music should be something that is enjoyed. You know, doesn't have to be, you don't have to write, you know, catchy tunes or anything like that, but it should be something that, you know, I think people are not going to shy away from. You know, content and meaning and structure are wonderful things, but they should all be subservient to actually creating music that stands up as a proper listening experience.
I mean, yeah, you're right. It's like it's like many creative things, like everything from books to movies to even video games. You want something that's appealing on the surface level, but you also But, you know, you also want things to be like, you know, the more they play it, the more they realize there's depth and understanding and there's more to it than that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And ideally that the first layer will actually make them intrigued enough to dig deeper.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first layer should be appealing enough, too, to get them to listen a second time, right? Because only through repeat listens would you actually catch some of the things that are going on. So, you know, I'm a big believer of accessibility.
Oh, listen, Christopher, it has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much for this, and it's been great seeing you here at the iDig Music Festival.
Likewise, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that was my interview with Christopher Tin, and it was a lot of fun and some really interesting thoughts there about Irish music and and yes, I even mentioned Boyzone, haha. All right, so I think I've got a bit more time, and I'm not going to end on a track here, but I am going to end on something I heard in one of the talks. This talk was by Russell Browers. He's the head of music at Blizzard, and essentially he's done a huge amount of like great music for the game. To be honest, I haven't listened to that much World of Warcraft music, but don't worry, I might be find a way to play some on the show later on, and I'll probably will be when I play some more from the video games live thing. Essentially, there's still a lot more from the iDig Music Festival. I'll probably be playing more on the next show, including some stuff I heard from video games live. But in the meantime, I think I'll sign off on this thing that happened during a Russell Brower talk. He was talking about the music and stuff about being from the heart, and I think I'll just play it now. So, this is David Collins at BitNote. Have a listen.
What, personally for you, what's the favorite piece of music that you've ever written? What was the scene?
It's varied over the years. Hopefully in the future always it'll be something newer. Yeah. But the one that's still holding at this point, there's a piece in Wrath of the Lich King that is informally known as Grizzly Hills because it goes with that zone, that area. The actual name of the piece is Totems of the Grizzle Maw, and that's important to me because one cliche you've probably often heard is, you know, create or write what you know. They say that to authors and to composers. It's true. And I wrote that piece both for the game and simultaneously for the game. I also wrote it as a love song for someone who was very important to me. And I found when I saw the visuals of Grizzly Hills, which looks like kind of the American Northwest, you know, big old growth trees and, you know, and there's bears in the woods and all of that, but it's very, very verdant and idyllic, and it made me feel some of the same warm feelings that I had about this person, and so I sort of let one feed on the other, and I wrote this piece. And I found throughout my career that if you write something from the heart like that, other people will pick up on it. They don't need to know why I wrote it, but they superimpose their own story on it. Just like when, you know, a song or a film score or something, and now game music becomes the soundtrack of your life, and it becomes forever associated with something that either someone you love or someone you don't, maybe something that ended, maybe a tough time, maybe a time of joy, who knows? It resonates, and I think the trick to doing that is you imbue the piece with that to start with. And so I originally loved it because I just put my heart and soul into it. And then later on, so time passes, and that person, unfortunately, is not in my life anymore. But I found out later that the world acts in mysterious ways, and it turns out I might have written this piece catalyzed by her in that situation. But it turns out, in the grand scheme of things, I wrote it for someone else. I just didn't know that at the time. Because I met someone, and I feel very fortunate because, remember I said earlier, you wonder if anyone's listening. I met a young player who was very nervous to meet me, and when they found out that I had written this piece, she threw her arms around my neck and started sobbing, and I was, glad you like it.
What are you doing Saturday night?
And it felt too soon for that. And anyway, she went on to tell me someone had kind of arranged for us to have a moment to chat about this, who knew the whole story. And so it turned out that she had hit a crisis point in her life a few months earlier, and she had decided not to go on. She was serious. She had made peace with this idea. So she didn't tell her friends, she didn't call, she didn't cry for help. She just went home, and she decided she was going to go out with her. She logged in her character into her favorite place, which was Grizzly Hills, and she was just going to sit there and let the music roll over her and hopefully just, you know, go to sleep, as it were. She said, I sat there for like 2 hours, and she had her arms around her legs, and she was just rocking like this. And she said 2 hours later of just continuous loop, she realized, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to hear this piece again. I want to hear more music again. I want to play more games. I want to fall in love. I want to do this and that and the other. I mean, she gave me a gift that day, because how many composers get to hear that, right? And so I'm happy to say that, I mean, that's why that means so much to me, and it made every bit of, you know, at that time, 30 plus years of you know, getting beat up in this business and getting laid off and getting pissed off and wanting to give up sometimes and go dig ditches or something sensible. it made it all worth it. You know, we're still friends to this day. And a few months after that, she said she was buying her wedding dress. You know, so yeah, it's video games have come a long way.
And that was quite a talk by Russell Brower, head of music in Blizzard. All right, so tune in next week for more coverage of the IDIC Music Festival. And from everyone at BitNote, all the best, and I'll see you next week.